healthy alternatives. Both research and real-life experiences are making it clear every day that our traditional medical system and practices need to be rethought, revised, and recharged in light of a more holistic approach to health. Dr. Jerry V. Teplitz, host of Healthy Alternatives, has been a pioneer for 36 years in stress management and optimum health. With a Ph.D. in holistic health sciences, a law degree, and as the author of 8 books, all focused on health, stress management, and performance, Dr. Teplitz is uniquely qualified to help us explore and incorporate healthy alternatives into our daily lives. He is a professional speaker and has shared his wisdom with over 1 million people. Join him to reach your highest level of health and wellness. Now, here's Dr. Teplitz.
Welcome to Healthy Alternatives. My name is Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you're listening to WebTalkRadio.net. What Healthy Alternatives is about is the notion of your reaching optimum health and wellness. You'd like to feel better, live longer, enjoy life more. That's what we attempt to show you each week on Healthy Alternatives. Every week, I like to begin the show with an issue area, something you need to be concerned about and know about. What I want to start this show with is talking about the eggs that you eat. Researchers have been looking at organic eggs. Now, organic eggs sounds pretty good because they bear the USDA certified organic logo on it. However, in looking closer at this, they probably should be labeled produced with organic feed. What does this mean? Well, about 80% of all organic eggs are produced by a handful of companies, and most of these businesses own hundreds or thousands to millions of birds and market them as organic. Now, one of the things that is required with organic is that the birds have access to be free range, to go outdoors. Well, it turns out many of these giant hen houses are in effect gaming the system by providing just tiny porches that are enclosed with roofs, floors, and they're calling these structures outdoors. So what this means is maybe a few percentage of these birds actually have access to the outdoors, while 95% of the birds have absolutely no access at all. Now, what this means is that you're spending more for getting what you think is a free-range egg, and what you're getting is one that's produced indoors. Is there that much of a difference? Well, there was a study published in Mother Earth News in 2007, and they found there were actually significant differences in nutrition between factory-farmed and organically raised eggs. They found the eggs that were raised on pasture had 1/3 less cholesterol, 1/4 less saturated fats, 2/3 more vitamin A, 2 times more omega-3 fatty acids, 3 times more vitamin E, and 7 times more beta-carotene. You're talking about an enormous difference between these free-range pasture hens that, in effect, are eating outside. They're not eating feed and grains that are fed to them. So you want to really look at this more closely for yourself. And how can you find out about a farmer who is doing free-range pasturing of hens? There are 2 websites you can go to. One is www.eatwild.com, and the other is www.localharvest.org. This will also make a difference in avoiding salmonella. There was a British study that found that 23% of farms with caged hens tested positive for salmonella, compared with just 4% on organic flocks and 6.5% in pasture-raised flocks. So there you're even talking a difference in terms of how you can be impacted. Since you can't be certain with the gaming that's going on, the only way you can really know the eggs that you're getting are really raised at a pasture level is to go to those 2 websites, eatwild.com and localharvest.org. Today, I'm going to be talking to a professional home economist and food writer, and we're going to have fun with this one because she has been a member of Second City Comedy Troupe. She's written the book Ultimate Foods for Ultimate Health, and Don't Forget to Eat the Chocolate. Yummy, yummy, yummy. And she's also written Health Starts Here. If you want to know more about me, you can click on the globe on this page, or you can go to teplitz.com, and you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook. Every week I like to talk to you about a healthy breakthrough, something that's positive for you that you need to know about for reaching those levels of optimum health and wellness. What I want to talk about is something that cancer patients really need to know. With a cancer patient, as they wind up with advanced cancer, they start going into progressive weight loss. They're losing both muscle and fat. As a matter of fact, more than 80% of the patients with advanced cancers, and especially solid tumors, develop this wasting syndrome that takes place, so that it's estimated that this syndrome called cachinexia is estimated to be responsible for 1/5 to 1/3 of all cancer deaths. And what's going on is a study in 2010 that looked at mice, and they discovered that the wasting can actually result in damage to the heart. You've got an option now that's available, and that's taking omega-3 fats, because they found in a study that was several studies that have been done with this, that patients taking a daily supplement either maintained or gained their muscle mass. That's something you want to look more closely at. And the safest, best choice of an omega-3 fatty acid is taking a high-quality Antarctic krill oil. Krill oil is superior to fish oil. First of all, it doesn't have mercury in it. Krill oil has a very powerful antioxidant called astaxanthin, and the omega-3s bonded together in a way that keeps them safe from oxidation, and it's easily absorbed by your body. As a matter of fact, krill oil is 48 times more potent than fish oil. So my suggestion to you would be, even before you know somebody who gets cancer or you get it, you start looking at this as an option of using krill oil for yourself. Before I bring on my guests, I'd like to pause for this message.
Every one of us is under stress from work, family, the economy, layoffs, the inability to retire. These are the realities today. Even if you're doing okay, we all have friends and relatives experiencing hard times. Hey, just watching the news can make you nervous. Make no mistake, there's nothing benign about stress. It can lead to high blood pressure, digestive problems, difficulty concentrating, and increased risk of disease. That's why Dr. Jerry Teplitz wrote the book Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. He presents easy, effective techniques to reduce stress, eliminate pain, relieve insomnia, and gain an overall sense of well-being. Managing Your Stress is fully illustrated and provides hands-on, proven methods you can use immediately. Dr. Teplitz knows how to cut to the chase. He begins working with you from the very first page of Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. Click on the cover that you see on the WebTalkRadio.net page in front of you and buy it now. It comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee, and it will change your life.
My guest today is Marilyn Smith. She is the only professional home economist and food writer in Canada. Then a little pause, because she's also an alumnus of Second City Comedy Troupe. And so she uses both that and her cooking abilities and her economic abilities to really mix laughter and learning. She's author of 3 best-selling cookbooks. One is Ultimate Foods for Ultimate Health, and Don't Forget the Chocolate. And she won the gold at the Cuisine Canada Cookbook Awards, making it the first healthy cookbook to ever win gold in this prestigious award. Her latest book is just coming out. It's Healthy Starts Here. You can find that on Amazon.com. Marilyn, welcome to Healthy Alternatives.
Hello, I'm glad to be here. So first thing we need to let our listeners know, as we're saying your name, Marilyn, it's spelled uniquely. Spell it for us.
M-A-I-R-L-Y-N. So it's kind of rhymes with Harlan, Marilyn Harlan.
And we're not going to ask you, since it's not a show about where the hell did that come from. So we'll skip that one, okay?
So, just suffice it, it's a family spelling. So there you go.
Okay. So why are you so passionate about healthy eating?
Well, when I was young, my father was diagnosed with heart disease. And I guess I'm always a helper, and I wanted to figure out a way to help my dad live longer. So I really saw the connection between food and health, and that's what I jumped into.
Was he open at that? How old were you at that point?
I was about 16.
Was he open to listening to a 16-year-old who was looking and researching things about health for him?
You have no idea how bossy I am. So, yes. Yes, you know, and I'd always sort of been really alternative. They were very healthy eaters, but my dad did smoke, and that was a big no-no. So he actually got a lot of pressure from the family and did quit smoking. But it was a matter of tweaking things. And so when I went into university to study it, that's when I really came home and read everybody the Riot Act.
And they said, how did we get her in our family? Maybe we could rename her altogether.
Yes, let's call her, let's get her out of this kitchen.
Yes.
No, but it was funny because they never eaten, well, we'd eaten canned beans, you know, pork and beans, growing up. I mean, that had been something that we'd eaten, but I really got into the whole vegetarianism of healthy eating. And they were a bit, you know, shocked. My parents are English, Irish, Scots. So it was like, let's have a roast beef and about, you know, two really badly overcooked vegetables. So, yeah, so it was a bit of a shock for them.
Yeah, I had that with my parents when I became a vegetarian.
Yes.
I'd come home to eat. It was like, well, what can we make you? And so I actually would cook some things and they'd say, boy, this is really good.
You know what? And that's exactly what it was. I would do exactly the same thing. But my best friend, my mother, I came home once for Christmas dinner and she said, well, you eat turkey, don't you? I went, Mom, I'm a vegetarian. She said, oh, I thought it just involved animals that had four legs. So she did. She didn't get the whole, well, it's a bird, it's alive, you know, yeah. So I'm not a vegetarian anymore, though. I started craving fish when I was pregnant, and that was 21 years ago. So I do eat fish, and I do eat some poultry once in a while, but mostly I'm more vegetarian than anything.
So that's starting to look at your philosophy. What's the overall philosophy you have on health?
That it's a real package deal, you know, and I think if we hone in on one area like healthy eating or just exercise or just coping with stress or just, you know, trying to have a positive attitude, that you miss the picture. So it's a combination. It really is mind, body, spirit. So you need to kind of address it all, not just go, okay, I'm just going to eat chocolate because I heard it was good for me. You know, that's not the right way to approach the whole subject.
So do you stick some of your other philosophy into your books as well?
Oh, yeah. Well, especially the humor part. My father, the one that was diagnosed with heart disease, the other father, what a stupid thing to say. Anyway. Anyhow.
That's for you to figure out later, ma'am.
It's another show. Anyway. Okay. So my dad has got an incredible sense of humor and a really positive attitude. And he's 88 years old now and has survived a triple bypass, a valve replacement. He's had stomach cancer as a result of all those drugs that he was on for all the things that were wrong with him. And honestly, I really think that the reason my dad's been alive this long is because he has this amazing love of life. And so he wakes up every morning and goes, what am I going to eat today? And what am I going to do today? And so that really, you know, puts part of that equation in that whole picture. It's astounding how powerful attitude is.
Yeah, because people can actually wake up and they could be saying, instead with what you said, same words, they can be doing, my God, what am I going to eat today? What am I going to do today?
Oh, my gosh, so, I never thought of that, you know, because I think I'm very optimistic as well. So I never thought of the flip. You're right.
Yeah, so the same words, it's the attitude that you bring
That's
to the
right.
words. So that makes all the difference.
We tell my son, the only thing you really have control over in your life is your attitude and the way that you cope with, you know, the stuff that life throws you. Because we're all given junk and stuff and horrible things, you know, but why do some people rise above it? Well, I think that attitude, that how am I going to cope with this is what, you know, makes them a survivor.
And I would call that both internal attitude and external, because you could be smiling on the outside and burning with rage on the inside, and your body will hear the rage on the inside and it'll ignore the smile, the pseudo smile on the outside. So we're talking about being, from my standpoint, being consistent with both.
Yeah, and being authentic. I think that's, yeah, that's the word that I would use. But yeah, really believing what you're saying. And, you know, what do they say? Walk the walk, don't just talk the talk. So, yeah.
So what's your favorite group of healthy foods?
Fruits and vegetables. Woohoo!
Yay!
Yeah, and you know, I know everybody's heard this a million times over, and maybe today will be the golden light bulb moment that you go, oh, I get it. But I think when I talk about fruits and vegetables, I always say that they're Xena warriors in the fight against disease. And if you have a really strong army, you're going to win the battle. But if you're only eating, you know, an apple a day, and that's your only fruit and vegetable, it's the equivalent of having a guy in your army that's wearing a pith helmet and has a slingshot. You know, you really need some stronger ammo. So the people who eat lots of fruits and vegetables tend to live longer and healthier lives.
The only exception with that, it would be, is if the guy with the slingshot's called David.
Do you know, I use that in my talk, and I go, you know what, David and Goliath, okay, there you go. He's the exception, but, you know, you are probably not having a David inside of you, but, you know, that would be nice. That would be excellent, but you're right.
Right.
It's, yeah, but I just get afraid when I hear that, you know, people are not having any fruits and vegetables, or maybe one, and I go, oh, there's such an opportunity here for improvement.
And just so listeners are aware, I actually met Marilyn when I was up in Canada. I do quite a bit of speaking there, but going on a TV talk show called Breakfast Television in Toronto. And in going on that show, I got to see what she was doing in terms of showing folks some really good stuff to have. And one of the things that I've recently seen in Toronto, because I went into a supermarket when I was up there, and I've been in supermarkets in the past up in Toronto, and years ago, the choice of fruits and vegetables were basically horrible in the wintertime. And I was really impressed with the changes I saw when I went into a supermarket this time when I was up there. So congratulations to you guys. You got good stuff now.
Well, you know, we're north of the 49th parallel, and we just don't grow stuff in the winter, you know. So unless you want to eat pioneer food, which is, you know, the squashes and the potatoes and all the root vegetables, which are great. But yeah, it's hard. It is much harder to get fresh produce, and it's expensive too. But now, I guess with the frozen produce as well, and then, you know, the idea that we can bring more stuff in across the border. So yeah, I think our produce departments are pretty excellent.
Now, in the wintertime in Canada, would you and also places in northern U.S., would you recommend frozen over what would appear to be fresh, since it would probably grown like in Mexico and places like that, which use high pesticides and ship them long distances and that stuff? Which would you prefer to recommend at that point?
That's a great question. I say, you know, try to eat local and seasonal, and if that doesn't work, then you go to frozen, because they basically, you know, it's usually local and or more local, and they pick it when they're just at their perfect moment, and then they flash freeze them. And the difference being that if you bought a green bean from Mexico that had to get on the green bean bus to come up to your grocery store in the northern part of the U.S. and into Canada, it's not even close to being as nutritionally dense as that frozen green bean that was picked at its peak, flash frozen, and then put in the freezer. So yeah, I really love frozen food in when it's off season.
Now, people tend to underestimate the power of healthy eating. How come you think that happens?
Because I don't think they know what it feels like to feel healthy. You know, I think that if you've been on this sort of cycle of not eating, you know, foods that are going to give you a great oomph, then you don't even know what it feels like. And so, but once you've felt what it feels like to feel energetic and healthy, and then you're sort of searching or foraging for those good foods. But if you've never felt it, you don't know what you're missing.
Now, in your one of the best-selling books you did, Ultimate Foods for Ultimate Health, and Don't Forget the Chocolate. So since you have that in your title, why don't you define for us, before we take a break, what is a treat?
A treat usually is high fat, high sugar, high calories, and doesn't really give you any bang for your nutritional buck, except for chocolate. So
except for chocolate.
Except for chocolate. Chocolate does have a lot of heart-healthy aspects to it. But size matters. I've always said that's true. And we can't, you know, tell
yourself. We're not going to go there either.
No, we're not going there either. So people go, well, Marilyn said I could eat a pound of chocolate. No, Marilyn did not say you could eat a pound of chocolate. You can have a little bit of dark, heart-healthy chocolate every day if you can afford the calories. But it's only an ounce, and an ounce is really tiny. So you can't go out and buy yourself a Snickers bar and go, you know, or this candy bar or that candy bar under the guise of, oh, it's good for me. It has to be the, you know, perfectly dark chocolate and just an ounce. But, you know, we eat treats too much, so they should be special occasions, except for chocolate.
Well, except the pretty soon the candy companies will have shrunk them down to an ounce, and but still charge the same amount anyway, so what the heck. So before we continue, I'd like to remind you that you're listening to Healthy Alternatives, Dr. Jerry Teplitz on webtalkradio.net, and we'll be back with my guest, Marilyn Smith, in just a moment. We're going to take a break.
I want to let you know about some seminars that I'm going to be doing in June. One is Switched On Selling, Switched On Network Marketing, which both take place on June 10th in Norfolk, Virginia. These are brain rewiring approaches to more effective selling. It goes along with the book that I've done, the number one Amazon bestseller, Switched On Selling, Balance Your Brain for Sales Success. On June the 14th and 15th, I'm doing the Switched On Management version of those classes. If you'd like more information about those, you can give us a call at 800-77 and then the word relax, R-E-L-A-X, or you can email us at info@teplitz.com, and we'd be delighted to get you more information. You can also become a certified instructor of my trainings. Those will be June 10th through the 12th for selling and network marketing, and 13th through 15th for Switched On Management. Again, you can call 800-77-RELAX, or you can email us at info@teplitz.com.
So I'm talking today to Marilyn Smith. She is the only professional home economist and food writer in Canada that is also an alum of Second City Comedy Troupe. And if you've been listening to the first part, I think it's been playing quite well. She's the author of three best-selling cookbooks, Ultimate Foods for Ultimate Health, and Don't Forget the Chocolate. That's small amounts of chocolate. It won the gold at the Cuisine Canada Cookbook Awards, making it the first healthy cookbook to ever win gold at this award. And her latest book has just come out, Healthy Starts Here, and it's on Amazon.com. She's just posted a YouTube video that has some fun things in it about that book called Marilyn Smith. And remember, her name is spelled uniquely, M-A-R-I-L-Y-N, Marilyn Smith, Healthy Starts Here. So Marilyn, we were talking about chocolate and you were saying small amounts. Let's switch over now to, what do you think of high fructose corn sweetener?
Okay, just be, I'm going to correct you on the spelling. It was M-A-I-R-L-Y-N. Okay,
see, even I can get it wrong.
Well, it's weird. Blame my mother. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay, Mom, you're blamed.
Yeah, it's her fault again. Anyway, high fructose, you know what? I think it's the devil incarnate. I'm terrified of it because, terrified is a very strong word. I'm very concerned about it because your body, well, for many different reasons, but here's one of them. When your body gets a whole hit of calories, which it does when you're using a high fructose sugar, it's thinking that it's going to get good, something good. And when it doesn't get anything good, because, you know, it's usually used in foods that aren't great for you, then it wants you to go find more foods. And so this is one of the reasons why people who are using this, in packaged foods or in pops or any of this kind of stuff, they're constantly hungry or they're constantly searching for nutrition because they're not getting it. And, you know, this is going to lead to weight gains. And it's very insidious in our food chain, and I'm really worried about it.
And what do you think of organic versus non-organic in terms of produce and fruits, vegetables, all that stuff?
I'm really mixed on that, mainly because I don't know what it's like in the U.S., but up in Canada, organic foods tends to be a lot more expensive. And I am more concerned at people making healthier choices in general. And so I think when you hone into, you know, limiting it just to organic, then in Canada at least, then you're really going to lose a whole ton of people that are going to think, well, if I don't choose organic, then I'm not going to be healthy. And so I'm really mixed on it. I think if it was the same price, then, you know, that's a different story. But right now it's not. So I think looking at the whole picture and choosing whole grains and more fruits and vegetables might be something that we can start with.
One thought from my standpoint as to why mm-hmm. people, even though it's more expensive to look at mm-hmm. organic, is that the nutrients in there are way higher. Like it would take back in, I think it was 1912, they looked at how much iron was in spinach, and they found it was a large number. I don't remember it offhand, like, you know, 200 IUs or whatever they use for measuring. Mm-hmm. And over the years, it's gotten lower and lower in regularly grown foods because they only put three chemicals back into the soil, but organic puts them all back in. And so you're buying something that you would now have to eat like 20 bowls of spinach to get the same nutrients that you would in terms of iron as you would way back in 1912. So mm-hmm. if you start factoring that in, it can make a difference in terms of what am I buying in terms of, even if you're buying it sometimes. It's almost
I totally hear what you're saying. And you know, there has been a lot of research that shows that there are, that they tend to be higher from a nutrition standpoint. I'm just still really concerned about, you know, the cost and I'm very mixed on it. Having said that, I grow a lot of stuff in my own garden. You know, mm-hmm. I do grow my own arugula and I do grow my own herbs and spices and I go to farmers markets. And so, it's a quandary. I still don't know what my answer to that question is.
In the States, it's becoming more readily available at reasonable costs as well. So it's making
huge.
A difference down here.
Yeah.
So sodium, lots of that's in food. And how do you get off of it? Because it's if you look at labels and start reading labels, you'll even see in things that you would never expect to have it in. And so how do you retrain your taste buds?
Well, I think you hit on a really interesting point when you said you find it in foods that you'd never expect it to be in. And one of the reasons is that salt is not, in my opinion, a flavor enhancer. It's a flavor disguiser. So it can make mediocre food taste reasonable if you add enough salt to it. And so, you know, you can package foods and make foods for the regular, you know, for people that have got so much sodium in them, they don't even know what the real food tastes like. And so that's a terrible thing. So getting away from packaged food is the biggest thing. But I think the closer you get down to basics, so that you really need to go back to basics to reduce the sodium that you're getting, because it's so in the fast food world, it's so in the packaged food world. And so getting back to cooking from scratch and maybe not eating out very often, and it's a hard thing to wrap your head around if you eat out a lot and you buy a lot of packaged food, but you really need to do something about it.
So you just mentioned cooking from scratch, and mm-hmm. I think the stats are showing people are tending not to do that anymore. So you're creating a cookbook that says cook from scratch, or how do you get people to start cooking from scratch again?
Well, I read this amazing article about, they showed a correlation between the demise of Home Ec 8 as a mandatory, Home Economics 8 as a mandatory course in North America, and the rise of obesity and heart disease and type 2 diabetes. And so there is a correlation between not knowing how to cook and then making the choices in the fast food and the packaged food line. So, you know, from a government standpoint or from some kind of standpoint, then trying to get, you know, Home Ec back as a mandatory course and having people teaching healthy cooking in those classes would be a great step forward, because this generation of children is not supposed to outlive their parents, and that's frightening. I mean, apparently at 57 years old, I could be in the Emerge with my 25-year-old son, you know, and we could both be in there for heart attacks. That's how scary it's getting. So I think cooking, learning how to cook is the big, big thing. And my cookbooks, I used to be a Home Ec teacher, and which is one of the reasons I'm very passionate about this. And I would, you know, I write books that anybody can follow. But learning to cook is a big step forward.
So let's go to a topic that I'm nervous about raising because it's got a lot around it, and that's eating beans.
Beans, beans, the musical fruit. The more you eat, the more you toot.
Oh, thank you very much.
Do you know, actually, that's a big myth. That's a whole myth, because the more beans you eat, the more used, you know, your whole gastrointestinal tract is unique to what you eat on a regular basis. So if you're eating beans a lot, the enzyme that's missing that you, most of us don't have, well, we don't, not, nobody has it in, as far as a human is concerned, to break those sugars down. That's what gives you gas. Basically, you're making beer in your gastrointestinal tract.
Boy, that's a cheap way to go. Eat beans. You'll get drunk faster.
Well, now there's an interesting thought. No, but anyway.
And cheaper.
And way cheaper. There you go. Then you can go buy your organics. Anyway, what you're going to do is the more you eat, the less you'll toot, because your GI tract will get used to what you eat, and then, you know, you shouldn't have any gas. Now, I eat beans every single day, and so beans don't give me gas. But if I had a piece of steak, holy moly, that's all I'm saying. So it would be very scary, because my flora in my intestine does not have the capacity to break down meat like it does have the capacity to break down beans. So I say eat them more often, go through a very scary two-week period of, you know, making a lot of noise and et cetera, and then hopefully you'll make it to the other side and you'll be fine.
What about using Beano? Have you?
Beano's brilliant. Yes.
Okay, so that, for people who are not aware of that, it's you can buy it in the store, you put it on the beans, and it degasses them, and so it's called Beano.
Yep.
And the other thing I've run across, being a vegetarian for a long time, if you are making beans from scratch and you boil them first and then let them sit for an hour before you start cooking them, that a lot of the gas molecule is broken down. So I don't know if you've
heard
of that.
No, for sure. That's a great idea. But then drain that water off, because that's where you get a clean water and then go for it. Yeah, that's a great idea. There's something called a toot trapper. It's a cushion that you can sit on that's got charcoal liners in it. And you can toot. I'm not kidding. Somebody Google it. Oh, no. Okay. And you can just let him rip all day. Nobody would even know. I mean, unless you move around. But, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, can you glue it to your buns?
Well, you could take it and say you have a sore back and just sit on it, you know, everywhere you go for that scary 2 weeks. But Beano totally works. I used to have this reoccurring nightmare that I was stuck in a sewer, and it would actually be my husband, you know, in the middle of the night tooting up a storm. So I put Beano on his food for an entire weekend, and he never had any gas. And he actually said, did you notice that I didn't, you know, have a lot of gas? Because yes, I did. Hello. Yeah. So the Beano does work. It has the enzyme that you don't have that will break those sugars down. So, but you have to put it on as soon as you eat it. Don't do it. Don't put the Beano on after. It's your first bite of beans or cauliflower or broccoli, anything that can give you gas. You put that drop on there, and that does it. If you wait till the end, it's too late.
So we're going to end the show on this gaseous note.
And your parting gift is a toot toot.
Yes. Plus, and if you really want it now, you can get Marilyn's book, Mairlyn Smith. It's called Healthy Starts Here at Amazon. You can go on YouTube and take a look at her video. It's that she put up recently, Marilyn Smith, Healthy Starts Here. Marilyn, thank you for being a guest on Healthy Alternatives.
That was so much fun. You really got my day going here. Thank you.
You're welcome.
My guest next week is going to be Dr. Pilar Jennings. Pilar is a psychotherapist, writer, researcher. She's authored recently the book Mixing Minds, The Power of Relationships in Psychoanalysis and Buddhism. So she got her PhD in psychiatry and religion from Union Theological Seminary, And she's been working with patients and families through the Harlem Family Institute since 2004. She's a researcher at Columbia University Center for Study of Science and Religion. And she's also a long-term practitioner of several different types of Buddhism approaches. We're going to be looking at how Buddhism and Western psychology are two areas that can both enhance and enrich yourself both spiritually and mentally. You're not going to want to miss this one. This is Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you can find out more about me at teplitz.com, T-E-P-L-I-T-Z.com. I publish a monthly e-newsletter. You can locate that on the home button, or you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today for Healthy Alternatives. For more information about Dr. Teplitz and his availability for speaking engagements, please click on the globe on the webtalkradio.net page in front of you or go to teplitz.com. You may also follow him on Facebook and Twitter by using the icons on the page. To find out more about his books, please click on any of the book covers you see. Eat well, rest well, take a breath, get some exercise, and we'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Healthy Alternatives.